This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
I thought we'd just start with a minute of silence today. Let's start with present moment awareness. So just to put down everything of the day, all our thoughts, and just relax. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Content to be here right now. And if the mind ever has stories, just remember the mind's like a monkey, always trying to run off to the forest. When we notice that, we can just let it go and joyfully come back to the present. Okay. So welcome, everybody. Welcome this evening. So, this is a little Buddhist temple. So being Buddhist monks, there's one main word there. It's Buddha. And so there's a word, the Sangha, which means community. And so when we bow to the Buddha. The Buddha was the awakened one. And in Buddhism, in science, we have a universe. And we say universe is so long. In Buddhism, they have an aeon. And an aeon, there's a few explanations. One of them is like if an eagle wing was to brush the top of a mountain, like a rock mountain, sooner would that rock mountain like disappear just from the feathers brushing the rock, that whole huge mountain, than an aeon, the length of an aeon would, you know, the time of that to finish. So because we think in physical terms of the physical universe, but obviously in a period of a universe is much longer than that physical part because it has mind components to it as well. And so that one whole period of expansion and contraction or expansion and contraction in Buddhism is called an aeon. And in the last 92 aeons, there's been seven Buddhas. And this was the seventh of the Buddhas. And so it's been there's like a cycle of seven. So 7 Buddhas ago, that Buddha had the most disciples, the most enlightened beings at the time of his awakening, millions. And then through those 7 Buddhas down to this one, this Buddha has the least amount of disciples. He had 1,500 enlightened beings at the time of his awakening. And so in that 92 aeons, there's only been 7 Buddhas. And then and the Buddha said, if our bones didn't crumble away and we were to gather them all together, then the amount of times we've been human in a single aeon would be enough to fill a Himalayan mountain. And then so you can imagine all that attachment to every single family we've had, job we've had, favorite things that we've done. And then we have to let go of that when we die. And all the time we get attached to these bodies. Every time we have a body, you know, we look in the mirror, we think, oh, that's me. You know, that's my body. And then, you know, we lose a finger or we lose a foot or we cut ourselves and we get upset because our body has become something that we don't want. And so in Buddhism, what the Buddhas do is they teach the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths start with that there is suffering, that no matter what we do in life, suffering is a part of life. You know? You can't be in the world and have attachments and have families and cows and whatever we're doing without some suffering. And why Buddhas are unique beings is they're a being who, in Thailand they say that I think it was 4 asankhayas and 1,000 kalpas, which is like 1,000 of those aeons, and then greater periods than that times 4. That's how long the Buddha, from the time he aspired to be a Buddha, it took him to actually become a fully awakened Buddha. So it's like way more than these 92 aeons, like an inconceivable amount of time of lives it takes a being to become a fully enlightened Buddha. And so that's why when a Buddha awakens, in a sense, they're a perfect being because they don't have any character at that moment. They become the Dharma element. So like there's Dharma, like a natural law of the universe. And when a Buddha awakens, from the time that they awaken to the time that they die, nothing that they say, do, or think is contrary to the Dhamma. So in a sense, they are a perfect being because they're literally like the living Dhamma. And then the Buddha said, those who see the Buddha see the Dhamma. So even though the Buddha is dead and passed away into parinibbana, which is like, now we know the word nirvana. Nirvana is like the cessation of all suffering. So that's what an enlightened being aspires to overcome all suffering in their own heart. And when the Buddha passed away, he said after that, you know, he didn't hand on the baton to another teacher. He said, the Dhamma will be your teacher. You know, the Dhamma will be your guide. And then so when we are, and there's two types of Buddhism, there's two types of Dhamma, because not everybody's ready to aspire for enlightenment yet. You know, not everybody's ready for the teachings of a Buddha, but everybody's ready to become a better person. You know, everybody's ready to become more self-disciplined, to have, you know, to wash the dishes better, to clean the toilets better, to do our jobs better, to have better thoughts, you know, to be kinder, to be more thankful and grateful. Like the art of the heart, you know, that's the second type of Dhamma that the Buddha teaches, because he knows that in the long run, if we teach everybody to be better people, then eventually, in one lifetime, they're going to aspire for something more. And so that's why when we do like the metta chant, and you might notice, you know, we do it to all beings. So even the beings with like the most evil intentions in the universe, or if somebody's chopping off your arms and they're holding you down, we're still not meant to think an evil thought against them, you know? Because the idea is we can look after our own hearts. So if we go out blaming other people, getting angry at other people, then we're causing ourselves suffering. But if we can think, well, you know, their actions are their own, but I wish them well anyway. And may they have a better action than another life. Because, you know, we can't control their actions. And in that extreme circumstance, there's nothing we can do. So why cause ourselves to suffer more? And because as a monk, we're meant to focus more on the Dhamma. And, you know, in this age, we have a lot of technology and newspapers, so, you know, we don't have to wait 3 months for the ship to come to find out what was going overseas. You know, people just look at their mobile phones and then they know all the news around the world. So it's like an age of proliferation. You know, so before we had televisions and computers, you know, people would sit around and tell stories around the campfire or whatever it was. And so our lives are increasing with information. But is the quality of the heart increasing? You know, is our aspiration to be better people increasing? Because we have so much convenience in our lives, but, you know, is that convenience leading to greater integrity? Is that leading to a peaceful heart? And so, so those two types of Dhamma. For example, there's the past lives of the Buddha called the Jataka tales, and there's some of them through the rest of the teachings as well. One I remember is when the Buddha was a deva, just a tree deva, like a heavenly being, but living in a tree in a previous life. There was a man coming along, and he wanted to. He wanted to make an offering because there's an old tradition of, you know, going and giving offerings to tree devas, and so the Buddha was this tree deva, and this man came around. He's very poor. Anyway, he made this offering, and because of that offering, because of that act of that thought of goodness, then, you know, he got some good karma, and his life really improved. And then when the Buddha was going on alms round. Because at first light, the old tradition is, you know, you take your bowl and you go walking into the closest village or city or wherever you are, and some people put some food in your bowl, and then you go back for your day meditating at a tree or whatever. That's the kind of the standard for practice. And so the Buddha's gone into the city this day, and he's seen this man. And because Buddha's a perfect being, so they can see the karma of being. So he instantly knew that this man, this poor man, had you know, given this offering to him in a previous life when he was a tree deva. And he saw once again the man was in poor and destitute, you know, his life. He was like so poor, he scraped together everything he could just to make this one little kind of tiny thing of food in a banana leaf or something. Like, you know, if it was really poor, it probably wasn't very nice either, but, you know, for him it was the best he had. And, you know, and then he was the first there and he put it in the Buddha's bowl. And then the Buddha closed his lid. You know, he didn't accept any more food for anybody. And then he went, you know, went back. And then instantly, that man, people started to say, well, why did the Buddha, you know, only accept food from this man? And why couldn't we give food for him? And with, by the end of the day, because of this all happening and everybody asking this question, that man ended up being promoted from being a poor person living in destitute to being the treasurer of the city. So that his karma instantly ripened because his aspiration was to be wealthy. You know, so he gave with the thought of wanting to, even though he was poor and had nothing, he still gave. And so even though his intention wasn't purely in line with Dharma, it was still in line with being a better person. So that's still a kind of Dharma. That's still, being a better person is better than being a miserly person. And so that's why we have to see the smallest of acts. Like as a monk, the minimum requirements we're meant to have is, it's like patch robes where we just get the cloth off an old corpse and make ourselves a robe or something. And living at the foot of a tree. In the ranger tree, we have to have a dwelling, like a roof or a cave or something. And old porridge. So, you know, if somebody's just throwing out some food, then you could just have that put in your bowl. And what's the fourth record? Medicine. And the fourth medicine is fermented cow's urine, which is like ammonia. So, I mean, but the point is that because you're practicing with your mind, the Buddha said, well, you know, your rags robes, they're like the king's robes. You know, your moldy leaves that you're sleeping on, that's like a luxurious bed. And the old porridge is like the king's food. Because the thing is that, you know, that's just the minimum requirement. You know, if nobody's giving you any food and somebody's throwing out, you can say, oh, well, you know, put that food here. Because you need food to live. And if you're sick, well, the only medicine, if we don't have an offering we can ask for, is fermented cow's urine. Because that was the cheapest medicine of the day. You know, that's what was poor people's medicine. And then the patch robes, you know, that's just making use of what you have. And the point is that the base level for us is like really, really frugal. And that's actually in when we become monks, that's in the chant that we do. You know, we're actually told all of this. You know, we're told the four things that we can't do. If we do those, we instantly disrobe and we're no longer a monk. And then we're told these four basic requisites. So this is like, you know, at our ordination, the main piece of information we're given. And then we're told that because we're developing the adisila, adicitta and the adipanya, the higher morality, the higher, the using of precepts to bring up blamelessness in the mind. And then the perfection of the samadhi, like the meditation, the stillness, and then the using of that stillness, that unshakable peace, to develop wisdom. And the wisdom is to break our attachments, that this body, actually, if you look at it, we're breathing in-breath, elements are changing. Breathing out-breath, elements are changing. Drink a drink, elements are changing. Go to the toilet, elements are changing. Yet we think this body is us. So like the first main attachment is like breaking up that conceit of I am, seeing that actually things aren't as we think. You know, we don't have an eternal self. We have a changing self. And then we look at the mind. There's a term called sankhara in Buddhism. And so if like a thought is a dharma, like a forest, a sankhara is like a component of that, that motion towards action. And it's literally like the monkey going from branch to branch. So the monkey going through the forest. And it's overcoming those sankharas, you know, because it's just this tendency for the mind to want to go and do things all the time, proliferate, just following its own course, like rambling on. And so what we do through the meditation and the practice is we learn to still those sankharas. So the mind, you know, when we meditate, we're tying the mind to a post. And until we have some joy and peace, that might be a difficult process. Because the mind doesn't want to be tied to a post. If you get a wild animal to tie to a post, it might even die. Because, you know, it might refuse to eat the drink, the water, and eat the food. When they, you know, get like a wild elephant or something. But most animals, you know, then, you know, they start to eat and drink the food. And then the trainer knows, you know, this one is trainable. And so that's like our mind. So once we start to get a bit of peace from our meditation or things slowing down, then we know, you know, well, this is something worthwhile. It requires sacrifice. You know, we can't just follow our own desires. You know, if we just watch television and listen to radio all day and let our minds wander everywhere, if we come to meditate, all we're going to get is absolute craziness. But if we have some reflective wisdom through our day when we're listening and doing things, and then we seek out moments, you know, to be more quiet, so we start to gather towards enjoying that quiet, you know, not needing to talk as much, quality over quantity, then that general quality will mean that when we come to meditate, it's easier to meditate because we are comfortable in that silence. We're comfortable with that reflective mind. And so understanding, you know, the reason why we're meditating and what our intentions are, that makes it useful because then we know where we're at, you know. We don't have to... It's good to learn about other people's religions, other people's way of life, but we should also know what we want in life and what we're aspiring to. So then we can build up those causes, you know, step by step. And I think the West has this big focus on mindfulness and meditation, but in Buddhism, mindfulness and meditation is about Dhamma, you know, it's about truth. The purpose of mindfulness and meditation is so that we can make use of truth to slowly grow our life in a better way. And so if we're just trying to be mindful and peaceful, then we may not get the wisdom to actually solve our problems. So it's good the more that we meditate to also take some time to try and improve our lives and see where we're at. And go seek out wise people and ask questions. At the time of the Buddha, you know, people usually in the afternoon or at a certain time, they would go and ask the Buddha or the monks questions or the nuns. And, you know, because the good thing about monks and nuns is that they're people who are dedicating their life towards practice. So, you know, it's hard. It's much harder as a layperson to practice, you know. If you're working or studying many, many hours a day, or you have families and, you know, you got to dust so many things, you know. But because we have few possessions and few things, our lives are a lot more simple, so we have more time for practice. Just being a monk can be hard for some monks. So one of the Buddha's cousins was a monk for 20 years before he finally started to kind of get into his meditation. And then he was like the foremost monk of psychic powers. When the Buddha was passing away, he could see all the states of the mind that the Buddha was going through. But it took him 20 years of being a monk to finally get his meditation together. So, you know, it really depends on our own effort, our own karma, and also our intention, you know, and our repeatedness coming back to that intention. Because in the Dhammapada it says, you know, evil is like a jug, you know, it fills up drip by drip. Or good is like a jug that fills up drip by drip. So we have to know what is good and what is evil, because one gathers in a good direction and one doesn't. So it doesn't mean we're perfect, but it means that when we reflect on our lives, we go, you know, that last 2 weeks was really terrible. You know, I just had all these totally useless conversations and my mind was all over the place and I totally forgot to do my meditation or whatever it was. And then you go, okay, well, because I didn't do the meditation, then I went out and did these other things. So I have to make sure that I do that or whatever it is. So we have this reflectiveness on our actions of body, speech and mind. And then that means we're gathering towards that good. So it doesn't mean that we've done whatever we've done, we have to be perfect. But it's that process of, it's like a ship on the ocean. It doesn't just go straight, you know, because well, in the old days, they follow the compass and they kind of go all over the place. So they keep having to adjust, you know, by the compass where they're going. And that's like our lives. If we just, you know, once a year say, oh, yeah, maybe I'd like to do that and maybe I should meditate. And then by the end of the year, you know, what's happened? So it's like whatever it is, you know, whether it's being generous or just having 5 minutes of reflecting on the good things in our life every day or whatever the practice is. Because if we can get some inspiration in our practice in our lives, then it makes things good. And whatever things we do, we try and be more present. Because when we're present, then we can put our whole heart into it. And we don't have to be like, ah, oh, I'm washing dishes now, but I want to do something else. Or, ah, oh, you know, I've got to go and teach this Dhamma talk and or whatever it is. Thoughts come up in the mind, but you just go, oh, you know, they're just thoughts. You know, just give up those thoughts. And, you know, even giving these talks, sometimes it would come up when I'm doing walking meditation or something. And I'm just like, oh, just put it down, you know. You don't even know if you'll still be alive by the time you're giving that talk. So what's the point of letting the mind proliferate, you know? What good does it do? But that's our usual kind of default. And so the meditation and the generosity, and these are things that just make us try and be better people, meaning that we're more present to what's actually happening rather than in the stories of our mind. And everybody can practice, you know. It's like even people who like don't have barely any ability to think at all, because practice is also a felt thing, you know. So you don't need a lot of wisdom. If we just take one teaching, and we try to apply that, you know, just try and be more mindful, or try and shut my mouth more, or whatever it is, you know, and focus on that one thing. And then, you know, a day, a week, a month later, you see that, you know, actually, I'm doing a lot better now. So, from the Buddha, that was half an hour. But from the Buddha to the meditation. Okay, so start in a comfortable position. So ask yourself if your body needs to move at all. Sometimes you might be stiff in the shoulders or stiff in the back. So you can just take some time to be aware of the body. Awareness is, you know, no reason. You can't be comfortable. It's comfortable but upright. It's when the body is a little bit upright, or just that intention of being upright, then the mind is naturally more upright. upright but relaxed. Relax the toes. Relax the soles of the feet. It's like this tingly soft sensation. Just kind of feel this spread through the toes and the soles of the feet. Relax the top of the feet, the ankles, inside the feet, the whole of the feet. At ease, at peace, vanishing. Relax the calves, the shins, the lower legs, up to the base of the knees, inside out, the whole of the lower legs. Form of awareness of the body. Relax the knees. Inside the knees, outside the knees, the back of the knees, the whole of the knees. Suffused with this soft peacefulness. And from the knees, moving up into the thighs, slowly, this soft peace, relaxing the thighs, the lower, the middle, the upper part of the thighs, all the way up to the hips, and the hip bones, the waist, the weight of the body onto the seat. It's totally relaxed. Letting go. Relax the belly. Just become aware of the motion of the belly from inside out. It's natural movement with the breath. Rising with an in-breath. Falling with an out-breath. Awareness of just this much. Relax the lower back. The lower spine, moving up further towards the middle back. Relax all of that area in the sides, moving up into the upper back, the upper spine, out into the sides of the shoulders and the shoulder blades. All these micro muscles, tendons, completely at ease, opening out, relaxing. Relax the tops of the shoulders, the upper arms, the elbows, the base of the lower arms, the tops of the lower arms, the wrists, the palms of the hands and the base of the fingers. And the tops of the hand, the tops of the fingers. From the belly, move up to the solar plexus. It's this diaphragm that moves the lungs. This soft white light you might visualize here is centering the mind in the present, letting go of any tension, any lingering difficulties in the body, letting them vanish. Relax the upper chest, the lungs. Just become aware of the lungs filling up and emptying. The wind of the in-breath and the wind of the out-breath can be seen with the mind. Centering. Peaceful and at ease, like we've come out of a desert into an oasis, drunk some fresh water. We're sitting in the shade of a tree, at ease and peaceful. Relax the heart. Likewise, you might visualize a soft white light spreading through the heart. Any lingering tension, letting it go as the heart relaxes. Relax the top back edge of the shoulders. The tops of the shoulders, the base of the neck, the collarbone, inside the neck, the spine, everything in there, relax. Even notice the wind passing through in the neck. There's an in-breath and an out-breath. Relax the tip of the chin, the lips. Might notice a slight smile at the corners of the mouth. And from the chin out to the cheeks, up to the nose, inside the mouth, the gums, the teeth, the tongue. The tongue down to the root. The nostrils, likewise notice contact or the breath coming in and out of the nostrils. There's this peaceful awareness, content with just this much. Relax the bags under the eyes, letting go of any tiredness, any sloth. As the eyes begin to brighten and become peaceful. Eyes of wisdom, eyes of peace. Much tension is held in the eyes. See if we can really just be friends with them. Bring this kindness to them. This kind awareness. Notice all that busyness, agitation can be felt in the eyes. Relax the eyes. Fill them with peace. relax the ridge of the forehead, the temples, the back of the head, the crown of the head, and the very peak of the head. Imagine a line going from the topmost point of the head down the spine, or through the brain down the spine, to the base of the spine, back down the legs, to the feet, letting out any lingering tension into the earth. The body is good enough as it is. We accept the body and we let it go. It can take care of itself. We bring our attention to the mind, the heart, the spiritual presence, whatever you want to call it. How peaceful, how aware are we right now? How kind are we? Just tuning in to this present awareness. And giving up the movement to the past, movement to the future, movement to proliferation. Settling ourselves, contented right here in the present. And if the mind goes off, when we notice, we can even just joyfully letting go, like a hand opening, or a bird flying off. We don't have to hold on. Just let go of the thought, let go of the train, come back. There's no judgment in meditation. Just being here is enough. Settling in with a kind awareness, like a bird snug in a nest. If you'd like a mantra during the meditation, maybe you could use Buddha, which means awake, or peaceful. You can chant it or say it. Chanting would be Buddha, Buddha, peaceful, peaceful. Otherwise, just be with the sensations of the breath. Some people watch at the nostril, some at the lip, some at the chest or the heart, some of the solar plexus. Just choose a means that suits you. What you think it would suit you. And that's good enough. This kind awareness of an in-breath. Kind awareness of an out-breath. Whatever your means of meditation is, try to keenly develop it for the meditation. Aware of an in-breath. Aware of an out-breath. Just this much. Free from judgment, free from concern, free from complaining. It's good enough. freedom to be here right now. Keenness and friendliness, keenly with an in-breath, keenly with an out-breath. See if we can be interested, have more interest in the in-breath, more interest in the out-breath, like a skilled lathe working on the wood, aware of the whole of an in-breath, the whole of an out-breath, skilled turner working on the wood. Like the temperature, the texture, the feeling of the in-breath. The temperature, the texture, the feeling of the out-breath. As we stay with our meditation theme. Friendliness and interest. Welcoming. See this calming down, this soft flow. There's a peace to it. There's a calm to it. There's a quiet to it. And with that quiet, with that calm, there's a friendliness. enjoying the friendly quietness of the in-breath. Enjoying the friendly quietness of the out-breath. It's good enough. Whatever is, just come back to the nest and start again. Alive to one in-breath, alive to one out-breath. Enjoying the in-breath, I breathe in. Enjoying the out-breath, I breathe in. Breathing in, unshakable peace, I breathe in. Breathing in, unshakable peace, I breathe out. Centering the heart on peace. Peace in the in-breath. Peace in the out-breath. Profound peace, unshakable peace. Unshakable stillness, unshakable peace. It's just the motion towards being calm, towards encouraging quietness, towards enjoying peace. Enjoying the peace in the in-breath. Enjoying the peace in the out-breath. finish with a little contemplation. Sadhu, sadhu. It is well, it is well. May we continue being joyful. Whatever goodness we have in our lives, whatever good we have done, may we enjoy the fruits. May we reflect on it so it brings us joy. May we live with joy and equanimity, ease and peace. Sadhu, sadhu. May we continue being joyful. May our hearts overflow with this joy and equanimous peace. May we share it with those in this room, those humans and non-humans, those on this property, humans and non-humans, those in the city that or the town that we're in, those in Australia, Southern Hemisphere, the world. May all beings continue being joyful. May they notice the smallest of good act. May they enjoy the result. And all beings in the ambrosial, whatever beings there are, above, below, and all around, this being and all beings, near and far, seen and unseen, lofty and low, we share this thought of goodness, all beings everywhere, all beings as ourself. Just return to the breath, to one's meditation theme. Just take a moment to see how one's mind is after half an hour of sitting peacefully. Can we remember how the mind was when we came in? How is the mind now? How is the body now? How are the eyes now? Are we more relaxed and at ease? Sometimes meditation is difficult, sometimes it's hard. So we just learn the things that are useful and leave the rest. Thank ourselves for the willingness to practice. That we may take a bit of this peace with us into our lives. That's the end of the meditation. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, May those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
And finish the little blessing.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam arahantu sabba devata sabba buddhanam bhavena sadasoti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba dhamma nupavena sada suti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba sangha nupavena sada suti bhavantu te.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you all for coming.